As we enter yet another year hallmarked with political and economic uncertainty and the inevitable change that will drive us, one consequence is that we can, at some level, give in to reactivity and short-termism. Because what's the point in making our own plans when everything is so likely to change? But this means we lose a sense of control over our lives, and negative, self-fulfilling cycles tend to result in our relationships, well-being, and focus. Instead, it's precisely now that leaders need to balance pragmatism with creativity to deal in realities and draw deeply on their values to do the right thing. We always love talking to individuals who have pushed at the margins of endeavor to see what they've learned from what few of us have ever experienced. And in this show, Scott and I are talking with a former elite athlete who explores the question of what drives us, challenging some of the simplistic and binary models about motivation and fulfillment. So, use this show as time to reflect on what's important in connecting with your inner self so you can commit to aligning your values and action, and perhaps gain a little increased sense of control in this crazy time.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to The Evolving Leader, the show born from the belief that we need deeper, more accountable, and more human leadership to confront the world's biggest challenges. I'm Scott Allender.
And I'm John Gomes.
How are you feeling today, John?
I am feeling pretty good, apart from the fact that I just had to go and see the doctor because I have an ear infection. So half my head is sort of muffled, but the rest of my head and the rest of my body is in good shape, so I'm feeling pretty grateful for that. How are you feeling, Scott?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty positive. It's been a little bit of a frantic day of demand, but I'm always feeling grateful to be back here with you and getting to have these conversations. And today, in particular, because today we are joined by Kevin Miller. Kevin began his elite athletic career at age 10. And quickly became a nationally ranked BMX racer. He started his first business out of his parents' garage at age 15. And by 16, he was pursuing a professional road cycling career that led him to racing in Europe. In addition to being a former pro athlete, respected personal development guide, top-ranking podcast host, published author, and father of nine, who has devoted himself to helping people elevate their personal experience and improve the way they show up for others. Kevin hosts the Self-Helpful Podcast, which has over 60 million downloads and is routinely visited by today's most influential changemakers. I had the great privilege of being a guest on his show, and it was one of my favorite appearances I've ever done, and it was a real honor. And his book, which we absolutely love, What Drives You, challenges today's myths on what driven people are and serves as a guide for clarity and conviction in what you authentically value and what truly motivates you. Kevin lives, get this, John, at 9,200 feet up in a national forest in a house he built out of straw, and somehow he has better Wi-Fi than I do. His house serves as home base for his family of nine kids and four grandkids, and along with parenting, podcasting, and writing, Kevin is often out on the Rocky Mountain trails, riding and running and competing at the elite level in his age group. Kevin, it's so good to be speaking with you again. Welcome to The Evolving Leader.
And thanks for having me. It's I love having continued conversations with people. And you and I, yeah, got to spend a good time as we did a series about you and emotional intelligence on my show. And so to come and be with you guys and continue the conversation is just a gift. Thank you.
Oh, well, it's our honor. Thank you.
Kevin, welcome to the show. That introduction creates in my mind many images, including a potential Netflix documentary about what it's like to live that life. So I can imagine the nine kids running around and, you know, the clouds sort of cloud base above below your house and so on. So welcome to the show. How are you feeling today?
After that intro, I was thinking, do I feel proud or do I feel like, holy smokes, that's just tiring to listen to. It's a little of both, but I'm doing well. That question, how do you feel? That's always such a big topic. So many levels of that. Right now, I'm a little sore. I'm just recovering from the biggest bike accident I've ever had in my life.
Really?
So I'm on the mend from that, but I'm moving slow. So I don't feel myself physically, at least, and that affects the mental state as well, as you know.
Yeah. Well, sorry to hear that. Hope you're on a quick mend.
Yeah.
It'll be a while. I'm mending.
Yeah, I can feel it. Given the topic of being driven, we need to get to your origin story and what is driving you. You started your athletic career at a very young age. It's almost impossible to ask, your 10-year-old self what was driving you there. But have you any sense of what made you get to the top of BMX racing at such an early age, and then pivot into trying to create your own business at just 15? What was going on?
I mean, there were some good things. I mean, I was brought up in a home that was very progress, thinking. I mean, it was, how do you better yourself? How do you grow and change and succeed and whatnot? And that was good. I really embraced a performance mindset, though, realizing that, man, as you achieve, you get accolades from people. Mm-hmm. And I embraced that to a big degree. So it was part authentic, joy. I mean, I liked progressing and finding success in areas. But then there was a part of it, too, that in hindsight now, I realize I was too addicted to, because it was my self-image. And so both existed, good and bad, the yin and the yang existed. And I was, from a sports standpoint, as a kid, and that's what you did back then. And I excelled in most sports that I did pretty well, and found my niche with the cycling, with biking in different ways. And then, on the business side, my dad was an entrepreneur. I never knew him to work for anyone else. He was always starting a business and running a business. And so that's what he taught me. That's what I was exposed to. I didn't really know anything else. I never knew a dad who clocked into work, who had a boss, who got fired, and I think it also fit me as well. And so it was just an expectation of all of us, I think. And he worked in the automotive business, and so I learned some things in that arena and found an opportunity to have a business. I was actually tinting windows on cars in the family garage. I'd bring them in, put a little ad in the paper, local paper, had a business phone in my bedroom at my house that I paid for. And they taught me profit and loss and how to run a business and to be an entrepreneur, and so grateful for that. So I was handed that stuff on a silver spoon. And I was making $50 an hour when my friends were making, back then minimum wage was like $3.75. It was unreal. Mm-hmm. So it was a good, so much goodness. I embraced some of it. When we talk about drive, there were also some things driving me that were not so healthy, which is generally the case for both of us. There's good and bad, and that's what we want to root out.
Yeah. And were your siblings all doing the same thing, or was it kind of, what was the family life around all of this?
I was pretty much an only child. My brother was born. I was 7 already. And then I was almost 8. And my sister, when I was 10, so very different lifestyles. I mean, even my parents, their lifestyle changed and they moved and whatever. So I had kind of an only child type upbringing, but they were, I mean, again, they never knew a dad who worked for somebody. It was always entrepreneurship. And well, I guess, how did it affect them? I don't know if either of them have had a real job either. I think we all missed out on the real job thing. So I don't think my sister, I think, did some college stuff too, but we all just kind of went into different business endeavors. And today that's where we still are. My sister works with my dad in his business, but kind of has her own things going as well. So yeah, that was, I don't know I wouldn't say it was an expectation. It's just what we knew and what we all embraced, and we never felt a fit doing something different.
And I suppose in that, the reason I'm kind of asking that question is this sense of control over your lives. Because the entrepreneur, one of the things they're always, benefiting from is that they haven't got a boss. They get to call out what they want to do and how they want to do it. You were taught that from an early age. So it's just interesting to know how that shapes your identity too.
Oh, that was huge. I mean, yeah, the concept of somebody, and I don't want to, my gosh, I have, you know, some of my best friends are employees in great places with great lives and enviable aspects of everything. But yeah, I did not know what it was like to not be able to take time off when you wanted to. You know, you may work more than somebody else, but you take time off to deal with family. Was always, I mean, we always say that family first, and whether it's first or not, it was always priority. And you kind of wrapped work around that, or brought the family over to the office, and we're together. And being able to be in control, yeah, I've never known anything different. And again, I think it fit my personality really well in that I tend to like to lead my own ideas and have autonomy in that. So it fit that. But seeing the lifestyle, they did it so well. My parents really did. And it wasn't all success. I saw them lose everything, literally everything. You know, in high school, I remember shopping for clothes for the next semester of school, shopping with my mom. And I bought the clothes because my parents couldn't. I mean, they were wrecked. They were trying to stay out of bankruptcy. But I had money because my dad had taught me to work. And yet, no matter what happened, whether it was, and there was a lot of ups and downs. You know, one year we're going on vacations and driving a Cadillac Eldorado, and the next year we don't go anywhere and we're driving something embarrassing. And I saw the ups and downs. And yet, we came to the dinner table at night, and nothing was ever different. Not that there wasn't some sadness or some disappointment or whatever, but at the end of the day, you know, we're going to watch Dallas on TV and play Scrabble and do whatever. And that really gave me the aspect of trying. And we talk about failure so much. And it gave me such faith in trying things. And if it doesn't work out, that's not a big deal. You're going to, you know, you live to fight another day. And I saw that. That was the greatest gift. I think the worst thing that would have happened for me in my childhood is if I had not seen the failures. It was just beautiful to see. I look back with such gratitude with that. And so I've worked to not shield my kids from the failures, and yet watch my attitude as not let the failures own me as well has been so convicting, so vital. And I think, I've had my kids attest to the same thing. So it shaped my life, my parenting, pretty much everything.
That's incredible. So I want to get into the, you know, the good drivers and, as you say, the bad drivers, right? So let's get into that. But before we do, let's talk about a working definition around drive, because you define it as a very strong energy and determination to achieve a goal or satisfy a need. And straight out of the gate, you dispel the myth that some people are driven and some are not. Now, your story and watching your parents and all of that influence, that feels unique to me in a way, because many people don't have that sort of experience with their parents and weren't driven at such a young age to achieve. So there seems to be a spectrum of drive. You obviously having a very, you know, distinct amount of drive, but you say that it's a myth that some people are driven and some aren't. So can you unpack that? And then maybe we could go into some of the positive and some of the less positive drivers.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I mean, I look at that statement sometimes and think, it's a great contrarian approach. You know, it gets attention, but it's honestly just what I believe and what I experienced. And, you know, speaking of parenting, you know, I looked at my kids and, man, I want them to be driven, not the hustle, you know, type thing, but I want them to know what they want and to go after it and devote themselves to it and find fulfillment and joy in their lives in that. And so here I am as a father trying to foster what I think fosters drive, to showcase it, to help them, to push them. And then I kept running across these experiences with people like Ben Hardy, who I lead the book off, chapter one, Dr. Benjamin Hardy, one of my favorite authors. And it was having him on a show 4 years ago, maybe or so. And he's just kind of off the cuff, talks about, in essence, that he was 19. He spends like 14 hours a day playing video games while his dad became a meth addict. His mom's kind of wayward over here. He's bouncing between homes and he's just escaping. So what was his drive? It was just to escape reality. Mm-hmm. And he spent it playing World of Warcraft. Kind of looks around. There's no big thing that happens, but kind of looks around and goes, well, this is not really going to lead anywhere good. If I stay here, I'm going to end up like everybody around me and my dad's, you know, meth addict friends and dead probably. Probably should do something different. And so he grasped onto just one arena that looked like it had some promise to it, and he went that direction. And then his success rate, or his success, you know, graph just is like a hockey stick. I mean, he just had incredible success. Like, you know, you think of it like the overnight success. Well, it just really rattled my perspective on drive, because I'm thinking, no, this, you got to build it, you got to create it, you got to whatever. And here's this dude who has nothing. It's everything I would fear for my kids, that they're 19 years old, they have no experience, they have no work ethic, they have no goals, they have no interests, and they're just wasting their lives away. That I think, man, they're just headed for the gutter. There's no hope. And what happens? The dude looks around and in a very short time surpasses everyone. He obviously had drive there. He didn't go to self-help school and listen to my show for a decade to figure this stuff out. He didn't go to conferences. He didn't have a coach. He went that direction, though. He just found a reason. And then the drive that's within all of us, he just let go. And again, that sounds like something like, oh, that sells well, but that doesn't really relate. But we see it all the time. We see somebody, you know, to make the exaggeration, we see the somebody that's the couch potato or whatever. And then something happens. It's a slow dawning of this is not going anywhere great like Ben had. Or they may get something like have a heart attack. And the doctor says, dude, if you don't change your life, you're going to die. Or somebody in their family gets acutely ill. We see these things, these little catalysts or something, and somebody's perspective changes. And all of a sudden, they find a reason. They find a little trigger. And then they become Mr. or Mrs. Driven. And that was me looking back and go, gosh, they didn't go and read 200 self-help books to go from zero to hero. It's just something dawned and triggered it. And so if we're over here and our drive is dormant or neutral, it's there. It's not that you, and that's what frustrated me with all these people listening, especially the people like I have in the show, and thinking, oh, they got lucky. You know, it's like they were born with red hair. They were born with drive. I didn't get so much. Or you even see siblings. And yeah, you know, Bobby, he just doesn't have much drive. Jenny, man, she just got all the drive in the family. It must be genetic, you know, bummer for him. And we just don't see that play out in real life. I just see either people find a reason, they get some clarity on what they want and why, or they don't. It's not that they have more or less drive or ability within them. And I saw this as it defied my own perspectives of drive. And that's what got me studying it. And it's a great thing to find out, but yeah, it's not common knowledge. We tend to look at drive as this thing that you either get some or you don't, or you're kind of on the spectrum, but the people that succeed, the people that we see, ooh, they won the drive lottery and they got a lot. No, and they didn't. And that's what I saw over and over as I was having people on my show here, these books behind me, and saying, no, they didn't have anything more than anyone else. They just found a reason. So yeah, that was the first myth that was really, irrefutable to me as we started looking into it.
I always think that's interesting when you look at late developers, and often in their early career, they describe themselves as lazy. Einstein is a good example, you know. And I like to think of that being true for myself and Scott as well. You know, there's hope here now. You know, we just have to get that catalyst going.
It's coming for you, John.
Yeah.
True. I mean, and on that, I've seen people who, you know, started off driven and lost it to some degree, lost their way. We see that as well. But it's, you know, and even there, that's a great example. Somebody who was super driven and then they lost it. Well, really? Well, obviously they had drive. So now did they lose it? Well, they didn't lose it, but they did lose their way mentally, and they lost the concept of what do they want and why. And they usually lost it because they went about it so poorly and burnt themselves out. And we see that a lot.
And just getting a little bit more granular around that topic, what advice would you give for somebody who's trying to find that catalyst if they're stuck in a rut, or they are feeling a lack of motivation in their life? How do you help people with that, you know, that journey?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I can say it somewhat easily, but I'm not going to say it's easy to do. But with those folks, again, they're often waiting for something to happen. I mean, we do that culturally. We even make movies about that. We love to see the person just bumbling along and they fall in a chemical vat or get bitten by a spider, right? And then they have superpowers that they didn't have before. And yet that's not real life. Nothing is generally, again, if I look at the, you know, near 250 amazing people who I've had on my show, not a lot of them have some great story. Again, like Ben Hardy, they don't have some story of, oh, I was going along and then boom, this happened. It's all, none of it makes a great story in and of itself, of where they finally just kind of looked at things, kind of did an audit and said, you know what, this is what I want. and this is why, which is, again, a huge part. You hear me keep laying that, you know, not having one without the other, because so many of us think we know what we want, or we take the cultural expectations of want and go after that, and we haven't questioned why. And when we don't do that, we often find ourselves going astray. But when we really look at what we want and why, and give ourselves permission to back off the expectations that we grew up with or expectations of culture and get clear on it, you don't need so much, you know, motivation and inspiration. You just got clarity. Matter of fact, it's interesting, as maybe you guys will appreciate this. Even since I've written the book, if I could go back and rewrite the book, I'd put much more focus on that term of clarity. We're just looking to get clear. If you'll get clear, you don't need to pump yourself up with all this motivation. And again, I'm a fan of motivation. I do it to myself as well, but I don't have to so much, because I wake up in the morning, I know what I want. I know why. It's pretty clear. I may have a day where I need to listen to some good music, have some coffee, and kind of get myself amped up a little bit. But I know what I want, and I see that with people so much. So my answer to that is, stop waiting for something. Get clear on who you are, what you want, and why, and really get granular on why, because your first answer to why won't be it. You're gonna have to get like five levels down. I keep joking that that's my next book, like the five levels of why, because we never answer the first why correctly.
I'm so glad you said clarity, because as you were talking from the beginning here, the word clarity came to mind, and the other word that came to mind is connection, right? So clarity and connection, connecting to your why. But without that sort of spider bite or falling in the vat, and with so those moments, what are some ways that people can do that and really authentically know this is what I want and why, versus what you alluded to earlier, which is what might be expected of me? And I think I might have talked about this on your show when we talked, maybe it wasn't, but I use this illustration a lot when I think about Andre Agassi, the tennis player. And he was incredibly driven and incredibly successful. And only at the end of his tennis career did he say, I hated tennis. Hated every minute I played tennis. Right? And he said, my dad didn't know where his love for tennis ended and his love for me began. So his whole life was driven after this idea of capturing his father's love and approval, right? So I'm sure when he was in it, he convinced himself, I want to do this. This is who I am. So I know there's a lot in there, but if you could pull apart a little bit about how do we connect to our deep, authentic purpose?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example on Andre. I'll come back to that. You know, earlier I was going to say, I did have the great privilege in my growing up of being exposed to drive from my parents to, I mean, my dad had me at, talk about motivation. He had me at the big motivational seminars as a kid. You know, I'm in these rooms with the Zig Ziglars and the Ollie Norths and all these famous people. And I got exposed to drive, and it was such a great gift just to be exposed to people who were pursuing things that they cared about. And when I, gosh, years ago, when I was doing a lot of personal coaching, I realized, man, the hardest people I had to work with were those who were never exposed to drive, to purpose. They were never exposed. They grew up in a home. Parents weren't super on fire about anything. They kind of just did the basic survival stuff, which is great. They put a roof over their head and clothes on their back and food on the table, you know, which is sweet, but they never saw it. And to wake up drive in them is hard. It was almost easier to find drive in people that were either exposed to drive or exposed to really hardship, really bad hardship, and it'll develop drive. That middle, that mediocre middle, you know, if you grew up in that, it's really hard. So exposure is great. So now when you come to somebody and you're trying to, like, somebody's hearing this, and man, it sounds great. And this happens a lot. People, guys, sounds great. I get it. I got drive in me. You know, I want to go forward. I don't know where I want to go. And first thing I want to say is, man, just, you're in good company. Don't beat yourself up for that. You may not have been exposed to much. And that's really the answer. The best answer is go expose yourself to things. I mean, today we've got, you know, gosh, you can go expose yourself to Netflix documentaries on different professions and different interests and whatnot, and find the one that resonates with you, and don't question it. You know, you can go out and experience so much these days, and some of it may be uncomfortable. But I'm amazed at, you know, even in being, even preaching this stuff, you know, with my kids, I've exposed them to so little. to the best that I can. Man, there's so many hours in the day. Their slice of life, of a pie of life that they've been experienced globally is so little. And right now I'm saying, man, go out and experience stuff. I just had a kid graduate from high school, and my biggest push for him is just go do stuff. Go try stuff, go experience stuff, go be with different people, go be with different. And now I say that, and it's not, that sounds overwhelming too. We've done the work with him, like with the Enneagram, and, you know, looking at emotional intelligence, thanks to people like Scott Allender, and helping him to understand his propensities, his predispositions. And we kind of know what lights him up. And so that makes it easier to say, okay, go try things in this area, but along those lines, along those pathways that we know that you're already bent, go do that. So it's not infinite, but man, go expose yourself to more. And I find that that's hard for people too, especially in this culture that we're in today where we stay isolated. But I mean, you can do it from the comfort of your home, turn on the TV and you can stream anything. And expose yourself to different, documentaries and people experiencing different things and doing things. There's a book by Lynn Twist. Well, I'm saying that it's behind me somewhere here. I'm not going to waste your time looking for it. It's hard to find. But by Lynn Twist, a renowned humanitarian, and her book her latest book is about finding. Just go out there and find the thing that we always talk about, passions, right? Especially in the self-help world, talk about your passions. And she's more on a way that I really appreciate too. And she's kind of like, find what breaks your heart. What is out there that just calls to you and breaks your heart? And it doesn't have to be, you know, my brother spent a decade over in Africa rescuing people out of sex slavery and stuff. And we tend to think it's like that. Well, who do I talk to? What breaks my heart? It's the middle to upper, middle and above class of Americans. Actually, anybody who's striving, but is just not finding fulfillment. And so how am I helping them, or how does that help the world? Who knows what the butterfly effect is? And I'm kind of past the point of trying to justify it. It's just who I feel called to, but go find exposure to that thing that it just excites you. Don't worry about how altruistic it looks at first. And, it takes some work. People need to do that because a lot of times, they sit there and they go, it sounds great, but I have no idea. You're right. You don't have any idea. You're going to have to go out and expose yourself to some ideas.
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense, because I think there's probably especially for younger folk, there's a real challenge in being able to pull apart what really truly motivates me, where I find meaning and purpose around it, versus, this whole, industry communicating what that looks like and what you should. And so if you don't have an immediate sense of vocation, you want to be a doctor, or you want to be a geologist or whatever it is, you have to engage in things to find that purpose and meaning, because it has to be born out of experience. And
that is what the effort of my book is. It's to take you through the key areas of life and say, okay, statistically, this is where people find fulfillment. It's not one thing, but here's where people tend to find fulfillment relationally, or with money, or with work, or whatever. Here it is. Now step back and consider, what is it for you? And give yourself permission to step out of just what you said, Gene, step out of the expectations that you were given by your family or upbringing or whatever. Step out of the expectations that are cultural, and let yourself look at, okay, so granted that statistically we know that we're going to find fulfillment in these areas, but they're in different ways. What fits me? So I hope that was the intent of the book, is to help you audit some of these things. But at the end of the day, back to what I said, you're going to have to go out and experience and expose yourself to some things.
Brilliant. So the next myth you dispel is this, how being driven equates to happiness. Can we pull that apart? That's a big topic.
Yeah, it is. And, my gosh, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love being driven. I love it. I'm so grateful. I think I'm grateful more so every day, as I realize, especially in this culture we're in, with ever-increasing depression and apathy and numbness, that I'm so grateful. I feel incredibly privileged to wake up every morning with something I'm interested in, something I'm curious about, something I'm excited to progress in. I think it was Tony Robbins who years ago said, man, the happiest people he finds are just those who are making positive progress towards anything. Doesn't matter what it is. Just that, I'm so grateful for that. Now, in and of itself, though, we all know those stories of people who had great success in an area. That's what we applaud culturally. You have great success in some area, you're a success. And we know the stories, but we just don't conceptualize it. We know the stories so often that are those people fulfilled? Do they have joy? We know people who, you know, reached great success and committed suicide. I mean, so we know that that's not the case in and of itself. Just the drive alone is going to provide happiness. And I think most people, I'm sure you guys to some degree, have gone after something and gotten to it and realized, mm-hmm. well, that was disappointing. That was anticlimactic. That was, you know, was that worth it? And that's the old adage, you climb the ladder of success only to find that it's leaning against the wrong building. Well, that was written a long time ago, and it's still so true. And so being driven, gosh, we look at that with celebrities and, you know, famous athletes today, and we applaud the success, even though we may look at their life and it's absolute carnage. Mm-hmm. And if you really dissect it, you say, gosh, would you like to be them along with all that? And most of us go, oh, actually, no. We all love the success, you know, the thing that they're on the front cover of whatever for, but we don't look at the carnage. I find myself calling that like small S success, you know, as opposed to the big S, which is you know, at the end of the day, does that person have fulfillment? Do they have peace? It's not all happy and fun to me, happy, fun, and play. I don't believe in that necessarily as the end result, but an abiding fulfillment and peace and having purpose and, you know, being able to look back on life with joy. And I mean, I think about that so often that if the day ends today, do I feel good about what I've done? You know, I want that. So drive alone though. Yeah, we can drive. And that's part of my story. It's part of in the book. There's been a lot of times I'm just driving with my hair on fire. I cite the quote by Yogi Berra in the book, you know, where he's driving. The story goes to the Baseball Hall of Fame and they pass the same landmark a few times. And finally his wife says, you know, Yogi, you realize we're lost? And he says, yeah, but we're making great time. And, you know, it's funny, but I've done that. And it's usually not that funny when you do it. You know, you find you're just driving fast. And man, I've hurt relationships. I've sabotaged businesses by not knowing what was really driving me, which is a big part of that. You can be driving fast a lot of times and you really don't even know why. You don't know what's motivating you. Like your story of Andre Agassi. He's driving and we all want to applaud that. But was he having fun? And if not, think, man, that's, you know, hopefully he found it out in time enough to change his life and he's doing something more fulfilling today.
Well, so what I hear you saying in all of this is the need to cultivate deep awareness, because who am I and what do I want? If it's all in the lane of what do I want to accomplish and achieve in terms of my riches and my fame or my, you know, being liked and all these things, that's very one-dimensional, and eventually you get there and likely it will feel disappointing, right? Versus what you're saying earlier, which is, you know, what do I care about? What breaks my heart? My kids and I were having this conversation just last weekend. They're only 11 and 12, but they're getting asked more and more about this, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up kind of thing, which really causes them a lot of stress because they're like 11 and 12 and they're saying, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't even know what all the things are, right? And so our conversation largely circled around, as you grow up, look around you, and what problems do you see in the world that you want to help solve? Like, focus on that. Forget about the profession and the job and all of that, right? Just what problems do you care about? Which is aligned to what you're saying around what breaks your heart. Is there like a, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but for people listening right now, is there sort of a self-inventory approach that you recommend to so people can really find out and reflect on, am I really connected to that thing that breaks my heart or that a problem I want to solve? How do I know my ladder's against the right building?
Yeah, I appreciate the question because you ask that, you know, about self-awareness, which we talk about. And I would say that's the holy grail. I mean, you know, that you wrote the book, you know, Emotional Intelligence. I am trying to become, that is my primary personal goal right now, is to increase my awareness of my emotions and to be emotionally intelligent. I have not been that, but that's a lot of the question, emotional awareness. I hear people, you know, at this point, they say, gosh, I get it, but awareness of what? Which is kind of what you're saying. What are they being aware of? And in this case, looking at drive, it's my focus is of what you value, not what your parents, what your culture, what the the media, whatever, not what they value, but what do you value? And that's the big audit I'm trying to bring people to in the book, is to read through it and go, okay, here's this story about this person. I get it. Okay, we find value in relationships, but what do I value? Do I want to get married? Do I want to have kids? Do I want one really close friend? Do I want 10 really close friends? Do I need 100 people? What is it that fits me? What is it that lights me up? What do I value and then want to, invest in? And that aspect, I mean, that's the, if I look at what's the ultimate agenda of the book, I wrote this with my kids in mind, my older kids especially. And it was that they would know what they value and be free to value that independent of me. This is not my values, which is, that's hard to say as a parent. Of course, I've got values morally and ethically and whatnot that I want to pass on and give them exposure to. And I hope they continue, but what do they value as far as, what do they want their career to look like? What do they want their relationships to look like? Their own health and wellness pursuit, their spirituality. What is it that they value? And again, it's not just an open book of me. I'm not sitting there as a parent or as a purveyor of this state saying, it doesn't matter. Just find what you value. Anything's okay. Well, obviously it's not. If you value eating M&Ms all day and that's it, you're going to die young. John, I hope you.
That's for you.
I said all day. Half the day is totally fine, but not all day. Throw a veggie in there, some good protein, whatever. So, I mean, there's obviously some values. And I do that in the book. I say, culturally, this is where we find the most fulfillment, the most health, the most life is in these values. But you find the one that works for you along that path of health and life, for you and for others. Obviously, if you have a value that's hurting others, none of us are going to say that that's okay, in essence. But yeah, that's really what I'm looking at, is awareness of what you value. And most people don't do that. We don't have a culture that does that. Back again to my own, even in the areas that I was not cognizant of, I was not real personally self-aware, I did have the gift of being exposed to good values and embracing those, even subconsciously, and those kept me from going too astray with that. And again, I hope I've done that. I have some testimony that I have with my kids, with my older kids, as I see them, different personalities, different walks of life, different values and pursuits, and yet those core values of health and life and goodness and whatever have stayed true. And man, I'm grateful for that.
Friends, if you're enjoying The Evolving Leader, I encourage you to order a copy of John's new book, Leading in a Non-Linear World, which provides a new understanding of mindset and how to build it in order to thrive in a more uncertain future. It's available online at all major retailers, and there's a link in the show notes.
I think you're speaking a little bit into my next question, which is around how does somebody who's really found their drive and is pursuing it and feels that urge to keep hard at something, manage it in overdrive with relationships, and how that plays out with people you work with, your family, and so on? Can it become too much, and how do you manage that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pull for any of us, especially when we find something that works. I mean, I can't separate myself from my ego, from my, fully. I'll be working on it till the day I die to some degree, of course. But yeah, there's that propensity to find something and just go full tilt. And, gosh, there's cycles. And, even back to that, what if you find that, I see that sometimes now where people find something. I mean, I know people vocationally and they're really fulfilled in it and they want to stay there and they don't want to get married and devote themselves to a relationship to a great degree, maybe just now or maybe forever. Who knows? I think, is that not okay in our culture? What if you don't get married? Is that all right? What if you don't? Some of my closest friends don't have kids. Well, I've got 100. So are they not whole? What I see now is there are some things that I've experienced they are not going to experience. Some of the glories of life with having kids that they're not going to experience like that. And they are experiencing some things, some immense glories that I am not going to, because I made some other choices and have some other responsibilities. And looking at that, you know, and making some decisions on what do you want to be okay with. That's, again, part of the audit. What do you want to be driven towards and achieve? And if you look at some area and realize that you're not, it's not a big concern of it. You don't have a big value in there. You're not looking to be, you want to be kind of healthy, but you don't care to be on the front cover of fitness magazine or to look like Thor or be in a bikini or whatever. You just want to be well enough to kind of fine. So that may not be your biggest area of drive. Like it is me. That's a big one for me, but you may say, gosh, I'm going to put it over here. That's fine. But then, yeah, at the end of the day, we're balancing, okay, is this drive having negative consequences on the backside? And again, we see that with people and wonder, oh my gosh, yeah, they're driven and they're going to kill themselves or somebody else before long. And kind of back to your Andre Agassi, man, if you're driven and you're doing some things out of some unhealthy drive, or you're overdoing it and ignoring other areas, I mean, there's going to be damage from that. And I've done that. I've driven with my life in some ways that's damaged relationships, not so much my family. I was pretty devoted there, but I did a lot of taking them for granted. I was going to say taking advantage of. I don't think I've ever said that. Who wants to say that out loud? But I probably have. I've taken advantage of people and just looked at them like I look at myself. Dude, we're all just tools to make this thing happen. And I didn't pay attention to, wait a minute, how about us? I did that in my drive that I thought was altruistic. We're saving the world. We're doing this. And meanwhile, I was burning all of us out, just burning us. I mean, that's consummate. And, you know, a lot of times if you achieve whatever, everybody thinks it's okay, but it's not. At the end of the day, it's not. And generally it leads to some kind of sabotaging, which is what I did with businesses. I think it's part of my bio. I don't think you guys read it, but a lot of my times my bio will include, you know, he started 19 businesses. Okay, I'll take some credit for that. But it's also because, one, I did a lot of them. I didn't know what the heck I was doing or why. And two, I just ran so hard that I burned us all out and I just walked away from them or I sabotaged them. So it's not all a great story. I see that somewhat in, I can pick on serial entrepreneurs. I think a lot of serial entrepreneurs, man, there's people who didn't know what the heck they wanted to do. And so they're going from this to this to this and this. I don't know if it's always some great thing. Every once in a while you find some business artists and they do it well, but I think a lot of serial entrepreneurs are like me and they just haven't found out what they want to be when they grow up.
Hey, what I'm hearing in that is, in overdrive, you can become singularly focused on the one thing at the expense of everything else around you. Now, speaking of those other things around us, I find that I can be pretty driven in many areas, and I can be incredibly lazy in other areas. And having done some work on myself with the Enneagram, as you mentioned, I have some insights now as to why I do that. But I'm curious, you know, thinking about listeners who might be contemplating what you're saying, and they might be thinking as well, gosh, I'm really driven here, but I'm also really lazy here, and I'm not sure why I'm so lazy here. Can you pull that out a little bit in terms of people that might be feeling that duality of driven in one area, lazy in another, would like to be less lazy in that way? How do I connect more drive to those areas that require it?
I appreciate the question again, Scott, because I always refer to them as aspiring people, but we have, you know, like Arthur Brooks talks about strivers. That's, you know, he's a striving people. The type of people who are going to listen to this show are all in that, or they wouldn't be here listening. They'd be over listening to some crime show on whatever network. And so with them, they're here because they're achieving some success. They're driven in some areas of their life. Most of them, like all of us, then have some areas where either we're not driven, or we may even feel, I find a lot of people, and they feel like they kind of are, but they're doing the, you know, 1 + 1 over here and the math's not working out, and they get really upset. I mean, I'm killing it in this area, and I'm just sucking over here, and it's frustrating, and it can lead us to feeling ashamed about that. Or yeah, just realizing I'm just not that motivated. It's money. I mean, that if you say, where's an area that I'm lazy, it's money. I am not motivated by money. And that can sound altruistic, but you kind of need to be. You know, somebody's got to pay the bills here. We need some money to keep the business going and the house paid for. And so I need to, and I've got to get help with that. I find myself, yeah, feeling lazy, and it drives me generally back to realizing, have I lost clarity on what am I doing here? We do need money. Kevin, let's get clear on what do we use money for? Well, to feed the family, feed the business. We can help a lot more people with money. It does. It's kind of a measurement of, hey, you're providing value out there, you know, in the culture. I got to get my head back on straight. So I need to be seeking clarity in those areas where I'm not doing so well so consistently. I do not need to spend any time seeking clarity on my health and wellness. I love my fitness efforts. I'm good there. I don't really need to with my work because I'm just, man, I'm interested in what I do every single day. But now we come over to these other areas where I'm languishing a little bit and I realize, okay, it's like affirmative action. I got to come back here. Okay, what do I care about in here? What is it what do I value? Come back to that, Kevin. And how are we doing? And now what do I need to do? And to that, using money, which is the one I talk about for myself, that's always been my Achilles heel. I don't think I'm ever going to be super driven with money. I've kind of given up on that. I'm not. And yet I have figured out what my values are. And so what do I do? So back to health and wellness, I don't need anybody's help. I mean, not that I don't, you know, my best friend's a functional medicine doctor. I can get help there plenty, but I don't need help being driven towards that. So I'm good. Over here though, money, I'm going to need help. So what do? I bring in other people. So I don't need other people with health and wellness money. I need other people. And so I have, you know, there's financial advisors, there's CPAs, there's bookkeepers, there's, you know, a lot of people that you can employ, and I keep them, they're my team to help me where I feel lazy. I feel unmotivated. And again, I like that perspective of looking at, hey, if there's some areas you want to shore up in your life, you do want more success and yet you're not driven there, you may not be. Let's get clear on your values, but you may realize, you know what? I'm just never going to be super driven in X. Well, get help. If you find value there, which hopefully you do. Now, the only other caveat I'll put in there is there are some areas where, I mean, I start the book off talking about spirituality, and I make the case that spirituality as a value, historically with humans, provides a significant amount of fulfillment. There's very few people who end up on my show who don't have a spiritual component that's primary in their life. I didn't have them on the show because of that. They're on my show because of that. So I'm making the case that spirituality has a lot of value historically. That said, if you look at it and go, you know what? I just don't care and I don't want to care. Okay. Doesn't mean you're going to be a failure in life. You may just need permission to, I'm not going to give that a lot of focus. Okay. Again, I think we need to look at those and get honest with ourselves, but even that, let's get it out on the table though, and understand where you are. And there may be some where you realize, you know, I'm just going to be kind of lazy. I think I'm always going to feel kind of lazy with money. Now I am going to employ other people to help me make sure that there is some there. but you know, some of this, I like that even too, just getting honest with your drive. Cause otherwise you find people who are constantly feeling guilty and trying to churn away at something and you realize they just don't care. Okay. Right. Well, either be good with not caring and that's going to have an effect and make peace with that, kind of figure that out, do the math or get some help with it.
So Kevin, this conversation is fantastic and I wish we had more time. I know you've got to head off to do something else, but your work here is trying to get people to move out of what you call living a life of the mediocre middle and harnessing drive much more intentionally, becoming aware of how to find it, align it with your goals and to maintain it. What's next for you in terms of the research that you're doing and the message you want to carry to the world? What are you really focusing on next?
I mean, this aspect of driving, you're talking about being mediocre, which I do talk about that. And, you know, I want to pull out that when we talk about that, because if you think about not being mediocre, you think, oh, I need to be better than the mediocre, better than other people. And to take that out of it. You know, what is success for you is success for you. That's a big part of the whole book. What is what you want to drive towards is for you and you alone. You don't need to justify it. It doesn't mean being better than other people, but it's being the you that you want to be, being the fullness of you. We hear that term a lot, but I do. I want that. And I want that for other people. I mean, this is selfish. I'm so grateful to be driven and I love to be around other driven people. I mean, I loved Scott. We spent, you know, near 3 hours talking when I had you on the show and it just lifted me. It inspired me. Nobody's inspired by somebody who's just dying on the couch. You know, I mean, I want to be around driven people, but I want them to see it well too, that, yeah, again, drive you can talk to some people about it and you can almost see the weariness in their eyes. They feel like, man, I've been driving so hard for so long. Can I just rest? And again, let's look at the values. What do you value? And even, you know, again, I'm 52 years old. Arthur Brooks, great book, his latest one, Strength to Strength. I'm in a different time of life. I don't want to be less driven, but my drive is changing and I'm looking at that. And my drive may be, and I want people to see this, that if your drive is good and authentic, it's going to provide peace, not anxiety. It's going to provide fulfillment, not stressed out. This isn't about doing more. We just had Ben Hardy, back to him again, on the show about his book, 10X is Easier Than 2X. And he's saying, man, doing some of these things with your head on right, looking at big things is actually easier. Yeah. You know, this isn't, so we're not talking about being driven and just driving yourself into the ground. My drive is changing from my next mountain bike ride when I go out, instead of trying to get another PR, which I love to do, especially at 52, but really I can get another PR, you know, and beat one I did when I was 45 or whatever. That's awesome. I want to do that. And I want to have the drive to sometimes stop in the middle of the ride by the high mountain lake, sit my butt down and just be present and be aware, get in touch with my emotions with Scott Allender's help and have joy and go, oh my gosh. And that's a different drive that may produce more fulfillment than the PR. Honestly, at this point in life, it does. So, you know, I want some of both, but it brings me back to, again, what are my values? And it may be a day to day. What today, what do I need? What do I value? What do I need today? And today, man, go out and kill it. And today, go out and it's kind of that, don't just sit there, do something. And some of my days are, don't just do something, Kevin, sit there, still drive. It's the same drive. It's just a different value that I'm looking at. So I want to help people continue to get clear on what is going to be the fulfilling drive for them. And that if they are driving well, it is not, it's not with their hair on fire. It's not drive until you're burnt out in the end. We're seeing that so often with people who are burning out. I want to keep people from burnout and to drive with joy, even as they drive fast. I got to admit, man, I still like speed, but, I want to do it with peace, a little less vibration and a lot more alignment.
I love the presence you're bringing to this conversation. I've got one final question before I hand over to Scott, which is, what's it like to have 9 kids?
What's it like to have 9 kids? It's there. If you did a pros and cons list, I mean, there. Some of it's amazing to see their interactions with each other. I've had some of the kids. I had one recently say, you know, Daddy, my siblings, this big family is the greatest gift. It's just second to none. I'm so grateful for it. And I'm not doing it, just so you know. They see the work that it takes. You know, totally fair. And there are so many payoffs, you know, so many good things. And it's also nuts. I mean, it is. It's honestly the true answer. That's an area where we were just driving. We were driving fast. We're having kids. 7 of them are biological. And then we adopted 2 more. And there's stories behind that. And my gosh, of course, do I regret any of them? No. If I had to do it over again, would I have 9 kids? Probably not. It's a lot of work. Yeah. I didn't really look at, gosh, what do we want to do? What would 9 kids look like? We never asked that question. We were just driving, man. We finally had the 7th biological kid, and I'm like, holy smacks, dude, I am done. 2 days after he was born, I got snipped, so this doesn't happen again, you know? Of course, we still ended up adopting some. It's incredible, and it's a lot of work. It's one of those where, you know, I'd sit back and go, gosh, do you want kids? How many? Having kids? You know, you start off with a relationship. Once you have kids, it's like saying, we're going to go into business together. We're going to raise another human together and make decisions together on this. Do you want to do that? Because I know some people who are just married, they don't have kids, and they don't want kids. They have a great way. They want to focus on their relationship and their careers and whatnot and helping other people. And that's awesome, man. Don't let kids get in there and get in the way for that. Some of you may want kids. You want one? Fine. If you want 9, dude, you are starting. That's a particular type of business. You better know what's in store for you. Talk to some people who have had those kids and see what kind of lifestyle they have or what they would have done differently. You know, being an entrepreneur and loving to start things, it's difficult to do that when you got all these kids. I mean, it really is. There's been a lot of times I thought, man, I could do this a lot more in depth and broadly if I didn't have 500 kids. But yeah, so it, you know, good and awesome and challenging. How's that?
Yeah.
Sounds like a party every day.
It's not boring, that's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, there's like 10 more questions I want to ask, but we're out of time. So we'll have to catch up another time, talk to you again. Everybody, I can't recommend this enough, this book, What Drives You, by Kevin. You need to pick this up now. There's so much usefulness in here and thought-provoking passages. So strongly encourage that. And again, Kevin, thank you for your time, for your insights. And for our listeners, remember, the world is evolving. Are you?